Everyone, welcome to CrowdForecast News, episode number 189 for July 23rd, 2018. We are broadcasting live on YouTube at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, but all Time and Research shows are now also available as audio-only podcasts from iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. Today, we will be discussing the 252nd weekly report, so you should see that on your screen right now while I'm talking. But if you would like to download the full PDF or view the read the full version in your browser, just go to timingresearch.com and you can get the full report there. My name is David Kosmeter. I'm the creator of timingresearch.com, and I am in Chicago today for the Traders Expo. So I'm going to be heading back over there as soon as the show is done today. If you're there, several of the regular Timing Research guests are giving presentations and have booths, so be sure to find those, find their presentations. Anka Metcalf and Stephanie Cameron, as well as Jody Samuels, Todd Gordon, and Tony Hansen, and John Person. So be sure to check them out. Let's see, Mike Bassani is here to moderate for the first time today, so I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to him.
Hey, thanks, David. Welcome, everybody. This is Mike Bassani with SmartOptionTrading.com, and you're listening to Crowd Forecast News for today, the 23rd of July. So we have a great show planned for you tonight. I'm joined by Jim Kenny of OptionProfessor.com and Roy Swanson of SteadyTrader.com. So, Jim, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us a little about what you do?
Sure. I'm Jim Kenny. I provide the content over at OptionProfessor.com. We've been doing this for a very long time, and we do educational meetings on options. And essentially, the objective is to increase the knowledge and awareness that people have of options and how you can use them for such a wide variety of purposes, hedging positions or bringing cash flow into an account or limited risk speculation and all the different angles that you can use with regards to them. Try to give you a little bit of a full understanding on the multitude of strategies, and then you have the awareness. And then when you look at a setup, you might be able to use this strategy to either enhance your position or protect it. And we do invite people to check us out after the webinar. Will give you that contact information.
Thanks, Jim. And I'm also joined by Roy Swanson with SteadyTrader.com. Roy, give us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Yeah, I run SteadyTrader.com. We focus on short-term, straight ahead, stock and ETF trading. So we believe in getting in and out within 5 days. Our average position is about four days, maybe. And we just like to get in and get out, make a few percent on each trade. We use quantitative methods, a series of three or four indicators, the RMO, some wilder stuff, and the straight ahead order book. But it's all about short-term trends with us.
Thanks, Roy. Appreciate that. My name is Mike Bassani. I own a little company called SmartOptionTrading.com, where I use the option flow on a daily basis to determine what trades to get in and out of, and technicals as well. And I use the option flow to basically tell me the sentiment of the market, whether it's leaning bullish or bearish, it's getting too overheated or too oversold, and what sectors they may or may not be rolling into. And you can follow me along there. I have a private Twitter feed where we call out all the flow of trades and news and events. Typically, I'm a swing trader myself, but depending upon what the market gives me, I'll stick to day trading and scalping, which I've been doing a little bit more of these last couple days than that. All right, so you guys ready for a fun show today?
Real fast, I just wanted to mention too that John Thomas of Mad Hedge Fund Trader was supposed to be with us today as well, but he had something come up and won't be able to join us, but we'll try to have him back soon for the show.
Thanks, David. All right, so I'm going to start with you, Jim, and two questions. One, which direction you think the S&P index will move for this coming week? And then also give me your confidence in that direction.
Sure. Well, right now, we are right in this 2800 area, and there is some gaps underneath the market. Now, we have got a lot of news hitting the market this week, from GDP on Friday to ECB and everything else hitting. So it's very, very difficult to talk with any kind of real conviction. You would think that the market would gravitate higher because of the earnings coming out. But I think there's enough that I'm looking at that I would only put it at about 50-50.
50-50 higher. Okay, that's saying something.
I wouldn't do directional right here at 2800 with what I'm seeing. I would do a different type of strategy. So that's what I'm saying.
Okay, I'm going to follow up with you in a second. Roy, same questions. Which way do you think we're going, up or down the S&P this week finishing, and what's your confidence level?
Yeah, well, when I sit for this show, I basically do the same thing. I've done it a number of times, but we run our basic methodology against the side. right. And it's showing it going down in the next 5 days. We have a pretty consistent 80% accuracy rate. So that's it. I'd say it's going to go down a little bit and 80% accuracy.
So interesting. We got one up 50%, one down 80%. I'm going to go up, but I think it's a tougher call on the SPY than it is on the Qs, because I think if the Qs blow out earnings, it's going to lift the markets. I'm going to go up, and I'm going to say there's a 70% chance the SPY finishes higher and tries to break out above this 280 area this week on some good earnings numbers that come in here. So let's go into a little bit of the details of this, and let's go back to you there, Jim. Specifically, what are you looking for? What do you see as the catalyst for this week that would get us out or set us down?
Yeah, obviously, the reason I'm saying anything on the word up is simply because the earnings are expected to be very, very outstanding, and they have been outstanding. But we haven't had great follow-through in some of the stocks that came out with good earnings, so that makes you a little hesitant. Technically, we've got some gap up around 28.15 that could go up and get filled, and if the NASDAQ does take off or something, you know, clearly that could be the direction. But there's also gaps underneath down by 27.75, which I think is where the downside prediction would come from. And also, there's a big gap in the transports down around 10.5. So if it's going to go down on the transports to fill that gap, of course, that would be negative for the stocks in my view as well. So my view is you know, there are two-sided trades you could employ. With the VIX at 13, the option premiums are not too excessively priced. And so maybe a two-sided trade here makes a whole lot of sense because either A, it gets going because of the GDP has a 4% handle Friday, or the earnings at these tech companies are really off the charts, or there's a disappointment and there's a rollover. So if you have a two-sided trade on, you could make out on one side or the other.
So by the way, you guys are welcome to put your screens up at this point, share your charts. But do you think when you're looking at this, Jim, that Netflix was sold off, was overdone, or do you don't think it was enough? And what about Microsoft? Because those have been the two big catalysts for earnings so far, other than the banks, which the banks are strong today. They've been buying the banks back pretty much last week.
No, there's no doubt about it. One stock that I've been very keen on is Goldman Sachs down here in the 220 area, because, you know, I'm a believer that there's going to be a lot of more action like we saw today with the hospitals, you know, merger and acquisition. And there's a big tailwind in corporate earnings coming, which means then they have a lot of money from the tax reform and the repat money still that has not been spent. So we got a lot of action ahead of us. And I think Goldman Sachs will be involved in that action. And its price to book right now is very reasonable. So I think if there is this activity on the upside in the next 12 months, you're going to be looking at Goldman Sachs probably getting a piece of the action. Netflix did get way hit down towards 340, something like that on the thing. And now it has not come through since then. One quarter is not something you know, that people will stick with. They'll react to it like they did, but they're not going to keep selling it if they think the following quarters are going to be better. So it does look like the Netflix went into some kind of support zone, 340, 350, and so far has held up. A lot of the stocks, you know, and great stocks like Best Buy, Home Depot, places like that, that are constantly beating earnings. And, you know, they seem to have some kind of a little bit of resistance above. And so if they get through that, then of course we're off to, you know, we're off to the races a bit. But if they can't, this next month, maybe we'll give you another opportunity to buy cheaper before a fourth quarter rally. So, you know, like I say, we've had good news come out and we have not had huge runs to the upside. So, like I say, I think a two-sided trade here, investigate that, price that out, see if it makes any economic sense might be the way to go.
Thanks, Jim. Roy, how about you? What do you see as the big catalyst to move the markets down this week? What are you looking at?
Well, we're really data-driven guys. We're price action guys here. And we don't look too much at things like media announcements and that kind of stuff because, well, think about it. Great earnings all year, right? The market's going nowhere. So I think a lot of the old rules don't necessarily apply. I think the further my prediction here and what my indicators are saying about going down this week is that volume is off. I mean, it is the last week of July.
Can I interrupt you for a second?
Yeah.
I mean, this is normal summer volume here. I mean, this is nothing particularly unusual at this point.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree. But that is exactly my point. It is summer and volume is down and it will be down because it is summer. Nothing unusual about that. And that's also why I think that because of, you know, I further more trust the indicators for going down because there's just not enough bodies out there to push it up.
Yeah, but do you think that they're just waiting for earnings to kick in tonight? I mean, tonight we got a monster, right? Tonight we get Google. And I love that Google's reporting on a Monday night personally because that gives me now a chance to play with it all week long. I don't generally play names into earnings. So do you think they're just waiting to see a couple of these earnings reports come in and then they'll come screaming in, or you think they're just going to stay out of the markets for the rest of the week?
Exactly. I think that it is. These are the dog days of July, and earnings, again, earnings have been great over a number of companies. Yes, today it's Google, but great earnings have not been buoying this market.
No.
This is since January.
So, okay. For me here, go ahead.
I got a question. Isn't the fine going to be factored into this Q2 with Google, and couldn't that offset some of their profits?
They're appealing it. So I don't know how long it's going to take for that appeal to take place, but it's a great question, Jim. So, you know that's going to be negotiated, right? You know, yeah. They're never going to play $5 billion, but they'll pay something. Yeah. So for
and
me,
they have a $100 billion war chest. I mean, to them, this is a rounding error. It's a cost of business for the EU. They've been getting fined, periodically for decades.
I tend to agree. For me here, the markets, I think, are all about earnings. I mean, you know, this has been very typical type summer action the last 2 weeks, especially, you know, very low volume, pushed up, rolling around back. But for me, the markets are holding where they need to. They're holding the 8-day. And I think we're really looking at some big catalysts this week. You know, it's not just Google. You have Google, Facebook, Intel, AMD, Twitter, Amazon, which is getting hit today, right, on the news that the president is back on that antitrust, you know, wants to break them back up type rally that we had that tweet out earlier today. So for me, if any of these names start to hit, I think volume will come back in. Specifically, if Google's good tonight, I think you'll see them try to run some of these names into earnings. I think that the catalyst is there for it. I think if you look at the way the markets are setting themselves up, the SPY has been the laggard, right? The Qs have already made a new all-time high multiple times since our February sell-off, right? You know, if you look at the Qs and you open up my chart and you come all the way back here, oops, sorry about that, on a one-year chart, you know, this is effectively our fourth new all-time high since the sell-off back in February. The IWM has been running at an all-time high, right? And it's been the SPY here that's been lagging, but finally broke this series of descending lower highs in the market with this move here. And it looks like it's just resting and poised to go. So I think as long as earnings are good, I think the market's ready to go. The only caveat I would say, guys, is trade war news, right? If we get some big blow up out there, I think that could be an issue. So what else, guys, do we have? Anything else you're looking at? Anything you'd like to share here at this point where we move down a little bit more onto our next area? What time we have? We're about 15 minutes in. Anything else you think for this week? Is there one name in particular you think will drive the market this week? We'll start with you there, Jim.
Well, I don't have any one particular thing, but I have been looking at Latin America. You know, again, if you're a momentum player, you know, the FANG stocks are obviously going to be always the place you look and that kind of stuff. If you're looking to try to buy something that might have a future to it and also may have a situation where there's a scenario out there that could help it. You know, some of the things around Brazil is starting to look a little bit interesting to me because it used to be around 50 on the ETF, then it went down towards about 31. Now it's trading about 35. They're supposed to be the beneficiary of a lot of people on the tariffs going to them for commodities and things like that. And so, you know, there could be a 20% jump or something like that ahead. And, you know, I don't think it's not something that's on everybody's radar, but people are rotating in the EM market out of Asia because they're uncertain of how Asia is going to be hit by these tariffs and what the effects are going to be. You know, the two things supposed to come out of those tariffs are a slowdown of growth and an increase in inflation. So if, in fact, tariffs do start coming on, you know, growth could be hit. Obviously, that would hurt Asia. And then, you know, there could be some commodity inflation and some product inflation. So that could help things that are way out of favor now, like your Brazil, like your gold and silver, copper, and like even your oil. So, you know, that might be some scenario out there that could make some sense.
Yeah, you know, you bring it up. These other markets around the world have been really rough. By the way, the banks are exploding here right now as we're talking, moving higher on the day. JP Morgan especially is really just raging up here. Roy, what about you as we're sitting here? Is there one big name you think that could really drive the markets this week that means more than any other names in the markets?
No, we don't. Again, we stick to data and we don't really pay too much attention to big name media announcements and things like that. So I'm not really seeing that. I agree with the earlier comment that I think what's really the bigger driver right now is the new international trade picture with the so-called trade wars that are happening, the tariffs, and the unarguable fact that China is really cooling, and there may be some news out of China this week that can further the pressings. Again, the news out of China right now is not, you know, nothing like it was for the last few years. It's really...
But do you think they're doing it to themselves? I mean, they've been purposely devaluating their currency, right? And they're, you know, are they getting themselves into a position where they're purposely doing it to take on the United States? And they don't mind being hurt. They can deal with the hurt better, I think, than we can.
Yeah, it's hard to say. Like I say, it's all volatile, but I don't think any of it is good. This creates anxiety, you know, fear, inability to plan, and all the rest of those things. So I think that's, to me, that might be the wild card this week if some big news comes out of China.
Hey, maybe we get lucky and they actually sit down and talk to each other instead of just trading bars. carbs. Jim, anything else to add before we move on to the next segment?
No, that's pretty much it. I mean, obviously the Fed's on a hiking situation, and if people haven't noticed, the 10-year note's starting to take off again. We're at 294. We were at 283 last week. So, you know, if it starts busting through three, you know, Powell's definitely on a normalization phase. He knows how much momentum is going to be happening with regards to all this tax cut revenue that's going to be in the pockets of these companies. And he's well aware that the repad money hasn't been employed yet. And Berkshire Hathaway just approved them buying their own stock back, and they got over $100 billion.
That's a rarity, right?
Yeah, well, what I'm trying to say is that that's bullish. You know what I mean? That's bullish, you know? And so, you know, and if this GDP handle is 4% or better on Friday, I mean, this guy Powell knows he's a little bit probably behind the curve, and he doesn't want to start going at a 0.5%, or he doesn't want to go in between the meetings that he has set up. You know, they're trying to stay on a September, December, March of next year, June of next year type of a time frame. And so, you know, with the GDP, I mean, this is a very pro-growth administration, more so than anything in a long, long time. So, you know, if you got a pro-growth guy out there who's filling the coffers of corporations with tax cuts, filling the coffers of the consumer, which is 2/3 of the economy, with a bunch of extra money in his 401k, making him feel very rich, and he'll go out and spend money. You know, you can't have, you know, 2% handles on interest rates, you know, with a 4% GDP, and who knows if it jumps to 5% if, you know, if he opens up these markets that he's trying to open up, you know, that's going to be a big boom to business as well. So you've got tremendous, you know, tailwinds here that over time could really kick in. I mean, the moving averages on a technical basis are all under the market and rising. So the surprise should be to the upside over time. And there's enough juice here and enough things that I'm seeing that these interest rates are ridiculously low from where they probably should be. And that's going to be a big factor looking forward as well.
Thank you, sir. All right. So let's move on to the next question. I'll start with you this time, Roy, since Jim just went. Between methodology, money management, and psychology, which do you think is more important and why?
that's a good question. I think at the end of the day, it's psychology, because the biggest problems most traders have are psychological. In other words, there are a variety of ways to find good setup. If one is logical and coldly unemotional about it, but that's where the psychology comes in. And
people want to admit they're wrong, right?
There are a variety of ways to do money management. And again, it's all about being coldly unemotional. But what happens is that we're all human beings, and people have trouble maintaining the discipline necessary to trade effectively over the long haul. You know, at a certain level, trading is kind of like being an athlete. And if you don't do your workout every day, you know, you don't perform well on the field. Well, it's kind of the same thing with trading. The discipline required to trust your setups and to stick by your methodology or your rules for money management, the discipline is pretty intense. And getting to act on that discipline, I guess at the end of the day, it's psychological.
All right. Thank you. How about you, Jim? Same question.
Yeah, I think, you know, psychological, if that means patience, I think that's one of the big keys, is patient to wait for the setups that Roy's talking about, you know, because the setups are not going to be there every single day. And so you have to have the patience. And then once you have the patience, you need to have the money management, because you don't want any one trade to blow you out of the water. And then also, I like to use the moving averages because they're based on price and time. And I like to use them to get some general flow of where I think the markets are going. And then also overbought or oversold, I like to use the moving averages to kind of give me an idea on that. And then try to, because, you know, sometimes when things get 20, 30, 40% or more above its 200-day average, despite everyone in the world going to be very bullish on that situation, the likelihood that it's going to gravitate back towards the mean a little bit is pretty high. And
you bring up a great point there, because even off a simple like the 8-day, when an ETF like the XLF gets, you know, well off the 8-day after a two big day move, people are still trying to buy it there. They're kind of better off waiting for a small pullback to get in, right? Not chase right. It when it's a buck off the 8-day, which that thing never wants to be a buck off of there.
Right. Or, you know, if you're a short-term speculator and you can find a formation where you have a high point surrounded by lower highs, and you know that the moving averages are substantially under the market, you know, then you could maybe take a trading shot at that point, because the setup might be there for A, an exhaustive type move, and B, a pullback towards one of the moving averages that you're using. So, you know, moving averages, patience, and money management. And then, like I say, with the options, you know, there's a lot of times you can do trades that have the other side covered, because a lot of times when we do things, we're dead wrong. Well, if you're dead wrong, wrong and you have a hedge on the other side, you can actually come out net ahead, even though you were dead wrong on your idea. That's one of the beauties of options, is that you can use them as a hedging tool, and the hedge can actually make you profitable, if the other side has a limited exposure.
Thank you, sir. So for me, I think all three of them are important, but I'm going to go with psychology as the most important. I know we're not getting a lot of disagreement here, but you can be taught how to manage your money. You can be taught a methodology, or you can use somebody else's methodology, right? If you like what they do, but it's the raw emotion of trading, I think, that always gets people in the most trouble. They don't like to be wrong. People hate to use stops. You know how many times I tell people use stops, and they never do? And I've been guilty of it too, and I'm sure we all have. And when the trade goes against you, then you get emotional, right? Because now it's gone lower than you're willing to let it go, and you don't know quite what to do at that point. You're kind of stuck in the trade, and you're in that hoping and praying it's going to go back up. And if you get a series of this in a row, you kind of feel like you're snake bit, right? I mean, how many times is people out there, you've talked to them or yourself, and you've had two or three losing trades in a row, or week, 3 days in a row of losing trades, and you just don't know what to do. You feel like everything you're doing is wrong. And what we do, I think, it's the ability to bounce back, to get your head straightened out. Take a walk, take a day off, and just watch the charts. People think they have to trade every day when they do what we do. You don't. There is an option to sit back. Like, today's been a very difficult day to trade. And I'll give you an example. The flow in the banks blew up off the open, and I said, don't chase up into this third candle up here, and let it come to you. And if you let it, it gave you a nice dip and a nice buy-in down a little bit lower, and now you had your move where you should be selling into this up here at this point. But it's chasing these moves when things get extended that gets people into trouble. Anybody have more comments on this? Anything they're thinking about?
Well, one thing I'm thinking about, I just want to throw in one thing as far as the markets are concerned. If we go through this July, end of July and into August, and it just continues to meander, I think another quarter of Q3, which would end the end of September, and then going into the fourth quarter, could be a great time to, be participating in the market. If these numbers turn out as they do, and if the things that are on the ledge break the right way, meaning if the tariff thing gets organized, where we come out with something on it, if we have a situation where, the GDP numbers come out with a 4% handle lists Friday and then continue, in the Q3 area, you could have a significant active market between September and December. And you wouldn't want to be churning your money to death during a period in the summer here where we've been in a trading range still. And so, try to be careful not to spend all your money during periods when maybe it's tougher to make money.
So let me, Roy, come back to you a second. You're an intraday trader, right? Basically what you do. How do you recommend you people, we talked about the psychology. What about money management? So how would you recommend they use stops? Do you recommend your people who follow you use stops, or do you tell them to just place a mental stop and get out? Roy?
Oh, for me? Yeah. Yep. That's what I was going to say a minute ago when you were talking about that. We're big believers in trailing stop. Yes. Protect your gains. I mean, that's what it's about, right? Especially in a situation where you are up. Protect the gain, because if there's one thing about the market is it takes away gains a lot. I have a little quote that I often tell people, which is, and it's to your point about people hate to get in a losing position. They hate to admit they're wrong. Mark Twain said, it's very easy to fool people, but it's almost impossible to convince someone they've been fooled. It's the same thing. So if you've been fooled into making the wrong trade, that's what the stop is there for. It's almost impossible to convince yourself you've been fooled or made a wrong decision. So let the stop just do its thing and move on. We're big believers in moving on. We're big believers in engaging with the market on a daily basis, not necessarily placing a trade, but engaging with it so that you're just, testing your theories, always testing your assumptions, challenging yourself, making sure you're on track. But at the end of the day, it's use stops, take your loss, and move on. I mean, your system, whatever you're following, should be able to tolerate taking the stops and taking the early loss. Because more damage is done by hanging on to a position that just goes all the way down and really surprised.
Right. Jim, you sound like you want to add something.
I was just going to say, Roy is 100% correct, particularly in the time horizon that he's operating within. Right. If you're doing short-term trading, you can't take big whacks on one position for a number of reasons. The big reason is you're not going to be around for the next deal. So the bottom line is that when your time horizon is of short term, the leash has to be kept pretty damn short.
Yeah, we had one of our clients.
I say that as a good thing. I mean, if you were using a big leash on a short-term strategy, you're not going to be around very long, because as soon as you are wrong a couple, three times in a row or something, then your reserves are down and then you can't play ball. So when your time horizon is shorter and you're looking at a a multiple amount of trades, you know, you certainly don't want to donate too much to any one idea.
Or, you know, something I also try to teach people when it comes to money management is when you get into summer, like this time of year, trade smaller. If you would scalp a name like Micron with 1,000 shares or 10 options, why not take quarter size or half size, right? Play smaller, give yourself, especially when the markets get like this and get choppier, give yourself more time, allow yourself to have more time for the stock to move around and stuff. When there's low volume, the algos basically do what they want. We all know this, right? The algos come in, they push names up, they push it down, they do whatever they want. And I think sometimes it's trying to teach people to just play smaller until the market is giving you the signal or the direction you're looking for. Do you guys preach that at all?
Absolutely. We play small every day. I look at it as a volume business. It's about making, you know, quite a few trades every month and getting in and getting out. And you know what? You may not get the biggest gains and you may not suffer the biggest losses, but it's the whole thing about keeping moving. And there's always another trade. There's always another good trade. So
I mean, look at the markets right now, right? We went from pulling down. Now the Qs, which were the weak link this morning, are now the strong link. They're leading the market higher here. And here we are going into the gap down this morning. And we basically filled that already on the SPY and just filling it on the Qs here. So, you know, the markets are kind of doing what they want. But if you got bearish on the open, you're probably in some pain now if you didn't get out of it. And I think it's that and the flexibility, right? You have to be, to your point, there's always another trade out there. I mean, you know, if you look out there right now, there's just, you know, I'm on here talking to you guys. I'd be active trading here, but there's news on PayPal that right now, just out, that third point just took a big stake in it. And look, you can see the big pop on my screen. It's just popped up a buck on that, and it looks like it's going to go more. So there's always something to do out there. Jim, any other thoughts you have?
No, just one other thought is despite all the back and forth, everyone talking in the markets, we're still essentially in the trading range that began in January. And the only thing that's really happened is the floor has been moving up. The floor was at 25.30. The floor went to 25.80. Then it went to 26.91 recently. And so now it's around, I think the floor right now is around 27.60. So the floor is moving up, but the ceiling hasn't really been taken out yet. I think the ceiling has a good shot of being taken out in Q4 or the end of Q3. But until then, there's still some back and forth that could occur here. Like you say, if they start announcing they're devaluating the yuan further, you know, that's probably going to have an effect on things. Or if he actually, you know, goes through and actually starts hitting the tariffs, you know, that could have some situation. So there's still news, I think, that could be choppy in the next 6 weeks. And so, you know, when things look very good, I'd be careful about buying into it because we're still in kind of a trading range. And if they do sell it off, I'd be concerned about being bearish because, again, we're still in a trading range.
Well, do you think that maybe what we saw here was the change of the Trump trade for a while, guys, that, you know, the banks and the commodities and the industrials led us to that Trump rally through all of last year? And those have been lagging now this year, and they've really been rolling into small caps and staying with technology. Do you think maybe they start coming back around to the Trump trade, or you think that's just dead until the tariff thing's over? Let's start with you, Roy.
I think there's just an awful lot of uncertainty out there right now, and there is a wait-and-see attitude because there's just too much going on. I mean, there's a ton of tariffs that have been announced and possibly, you know, who knows where any of them are going to go. And it's across the board. I mean, it's from Europe through Asia, NAFTA, it's every continent, right? So, you know, one of the issues I think facing C-level people right now is, okay, I'm sitting on a war chest. Yeah, earnings are good. But where am I going to go for growth? And I think a lot of people are saying, well, I don't know where to go for growth right now because, first of all, everything is global. And where are you going? You know, where am I going to go where some announcement on a tariff isn't going to screw me? So plus, if I want to reinvest money and grow, where am I going to get the people? Because hiring is not easy right now. There are no people, right? Fill jobs and fuel growth. So I think while the conditions for growth are fundamentally strong, the tactical ability to grow right now is pretty much hamstrung.
You bring up, what about small caps, Jim? Would you hide there from the tariffs? I mean, that seems to be the big reason the small caps have been doing well. Every time there's tariff news, the small caps seem to go higher. They seem to be a safer play, not as affected by tariffs. And I know Trump said in an interview he wants to put tariffs on $505 billion of Chinese names. We'll see how that plays out eventually.
Yeah, it just seems to me that as I look across the board, there's a lot of stuff that's kind of stalled out a little bit. And that would be, you know, even the FANGs might be stalling out here a little bit. The biotech seems to be stalling out a little bit after a big run. Russell seems to be stalling out here a little bit after a big run. So I think we're kind of in a stall phase. And again, that's also a product of being in a trading range, and we're banging up towards the top end of the trading range. You need to have something to send you through the top of the trading range. And in order to do that, I think it's going to take a little bit more time and a little bit more news to do that. And, you know, the Russell, one of the reasons it's gone up and can continues to be a good place to hide is because it is one of the big beneficiaries of the tax cuts. I think they're saying small companies actually are getting a bigger bang for their buck in a lot of cases, because some of the large companies had already had lower tax rates, like Johnson & Johnson. I think they were already at 21% even before they cut it. So, I think, right now it seems like people are gravitating in the emerging markets. They're getting out of the area of Asia and they're going over to Latin America. I think people are getting into a couple of sectors like the financials, and they're looking for the financials to start doing what they were supposed to do in January. Because if you look back to January and you play the tape back, everybody said to get into financials, everybody said to get into Europe, everybody said to get into emerging markets. Both, all three were very, very crappy ideas. So, you can't always just go with what people are out there doing currently, because sometimes something that's already happened or something that's very popular already has big participation in it. And if it already has huge participation in it, you've got to find new players, and B, some of those players that are in there with big gains may want to come out. So you always got to be a little bit careful that way.
You know, you bring up a good point, and I appreciate that. You know, a lot of times people love to pile into a trade, and I call option flow, and the people in my service, they see the flow. And when IQ was still, with a great name to look at IQ, when IQ was all the way up here and they're still saying, no, they're still buying options on it. They don't play like us, right? These big funds, they buy and they don't care, right? They shoot and they forget and they keep rolling up and rolling out. But when a stock's had a big move, you really have to ask yourself, is this the time for me to buy it? Even if the flow is there and the news is there, should I really be buying into this at this point? And I think the problem is too many people chasing at the highs. And when the dip comes, they're afraid to buy it back, right? It's that I don't want to buy into weakness. It might be going lower. Well, buy smaller so you can add some more on the way down. But if your methodology is right, as you said, or you're picking your technical levels right, it should be a pretty decent entrance point. It may not be perfect, but it should be pretty good. What do you think, Roy?
Well, I just want to reinforce that earlier point about staying with the small caps, the mid caps. We focus almost pretty much exclusively on the smaller and the mid caps. And the reason is because the big caps are the ones that are in the news every day. The big caps are the ones that are in the tweets. They get pushed around by the media, and we like to trade on data. So, when you get to those names that are not in the news and are not being subjects of all this in the media, the data can actually help you, and the indicators are more accurate because there's not all this extra push in what I call wind from the media. So we're big believers in staying with the names that are out of the news.
Okay. So, Jim, let's go back to you. Might you take a couple minutes? Do you want to tell us about a trade you've done recently or a trade you would recommend people getting into here to do a couple of these real quick?
Well, there's not an exact trade, but I do believe when this VIX gets into the 10, 11, 12 area or up to 17, 18, 19, 20 area, it does present a bit of an opportunity. And so again, with the news hitting right now, the two-sided trade, a straddle or a strangle, is worth pricing out and then see if you believe there'll be enough volatility on whatever you're looking at to make it worthwhile, knowing fully well you'll probably be a loser on one side. And then, of course, maybe make out enough on the one side to make it worthwhile. Because when the premiums get pretty low and there's a lot of news that's going to be hitting the fan, obviously, if the VIX is going to jump back up towards 15 or 18 or something like that, you'd probably get some pretty good action there. Conversely, when it gets up towards 20, like it did recently, you had a lot of move on the upside when it went from like 26.90 all the way up here to like 28.20 on the S&P. So the two-sided trades, I like that on many things. And I think people should investigate how to do not only a two-sided trade, but if you were taking a trade, and see what a short-term option on the other side is worth. Because, if you're going to be right on these things, you tend to be pretty well right. And if you're wrong, it tends to go the other way pretty nicely as well. So if you can use these options as a hedge. The other thing is when you get big, big moves up, like you just got in Amazon, the call premium, then you're the owner of the stock, the call premiums get very, very fat. And you can actually bring in some nice cash flow into your account and also give yourselves some downside hedge if you sell out of the money calls on them. You're still in the game if you sell an out of the money call because you're selling a strike price above the market, but you're going to get paid a big fat premium. So if the market goes sideways or down, you'll still own the stock and you'll keep the premium. If it does take off, obviously you are capping your upside at the strike price plus premium, but then you can make adjustments on the position as well. So you have some flexibility as well. But when you get big, big moves up and you can see that the call premiums have exploded, sometimes that's not a bad time to do some covered writing at that point.
Appreciate it. Roy, I'm going to ask you the same question beforehand. Just, you talk about not following flow or news or events and stuff. What's an example of a name you guys have traded lately that was a nice trade? Can you give us something like that? Because you're kind of a little bit different from the rest of us, so I thought it'd be good to point that out.
Yeah, I'm looking at my screen right now, and we're having a good day.
Feel free to share your screen, by the way.
One, I'll tell you, I've got four in play today. One is INDB, Independent Bank Corp. You know, talk about, a lot of talk this morning about the bank stocks, and here's one probably no one's ever heard of, INDB. We're up between 4.5% today, just this morning. And then another one is IIIN in Steel Industries. Again, a lot of talk about steel and stuff, but this is a player that you don't hear about, and that one's up close to 3%. So, we love these names that no one's ever heard of.
So I'm looking at some of these, and just a question. The volume there is very, very low. So you don't have issues with that, trading in and out of them with the low volume?
Not really, no. No, we're not big. We like to see the volume tradable, but we're not people, we're not looking for the huge numbers on volume.
All right, so how about giving our audience some of the names you're looking at here or some ideas for them to look forward for the rest of the week?
From me, I will run my scans at the close, so I really don't know yet for the rest of the week. I do it on a daily basis.
Okay. So usually I'm full of ideas coming into a day like today. And one of the things that made coming into today a little bit more difficult was Friday was options expiration, right? So all the July monthlies get rolled out or they preem out. And the buying, that day is always just a tough day in the markets. It's even worse when we're dealing with a day in the summer in the middle of earnings seasons. But a couple of things stood out to me that I talked about to people and said we should look at them on Friday. And one was JP Morgan. And in JP Morgan, what we loved about it was all day long they were hitting the August 3rd really cheap calls, and I'm not usually a fan of this, so we recommended other strikes, but they were hitting these August 3rd 118 calls, and they were hitting them down around 9 to 13 cents. You can see now they basically more than doubled today, almost tripled the first comes that came in. 18,000 of them stuck to open interest. This was opening type action. Now I cannot recommend you chasing this here, right? So this is the problem when you have a trade like this, and this morning you had to be jumped on, or you had to be in it from Friday. It's too late to catch it here, right? This move in JP Morgan here, all the way up now to 113.60 something, right? This is coming to the top of this range in that 114.73 resistance. But again, it's way off the moving average on the 8-day, and it's out of the Bollinger Band on the daily. The one thing we know about banks is, that's not an area they normally like to live in. So you got to be a little careful with it. The one name I would keep an eye on this week, and it is a China name, is IQ. And it's not a name I love here. I mean, I took a small little 10 cents loss on it on Common this morning, to be perfectly honest with everybody. But they were selling puts this morning on this thing in a major way, and they were buying calls. And when you see put sellers in a name, that's something I like to keep a look at. What makes it special is when somebody's selling puts, they're willing to take delivery of the stock. So this guy came in right on the open and started hammering the August 2750 puts on the bid when the stock was moving up, very, very aggressively hitting it, and did it multiple times. And they look, over 4,000 of them, and they looked like they were sold to open. And then that came following through with weekly 32 calls being swept simultaneously. So, it's not doing anything here today. It's a name I would keep an eye on this week. If you're going to play a name like IQ, the one thing I'll always tell everybody out there is you have to play smaller and be more careful. The reason is this name can whip around. This name is very, very whippy. It moves on news. It's also a China name. It's the Netflix of China, right? If you guys didn't know that. So you got to be a lot more careful on that. You have to really think twice about it and go from there and to see how this all plays out. So I like some names like that. I'm not really in love with a name like a China name for a hold, but for a trade, I'm absolutely going to take it. This week, I think, is just tough with earnings, and I don't play earnings. I don't tend to be involved in them because the options are juiced, right? And you have to hit the implied move on the name, and that can be really tough. So the one name I will also tell you guys is to watch Google tonight. Watch this one carefully, because if Google's good, it can move the whole sector and be good. Now, the implied move on this thing is $46, and this is one of the reasons why I don't play options. That means, to get paid on this thing, you need a $46 move to the upper downside for those options to pay out. And that's a lot. Now, it's Google. It's a $1,200 stock. It can definitely move that. But these market makers, when they have a couple guys that have really taken them for a ride, like Netflix and Microsoft, who they both missed on, they tend to get better on as they go on and do that. So, but I would hope look for this name to play as we move forward from here at that point. You guys have any thoughts on each other's trades or what they do here? Anything you want to go into?
I think that Google idea, or the focusing on Google is kind of important, because it's really right near its all-time all-time high, 1,200?
At 1,221. So right now it's at 1,209. So just for all intents and purposes, it's there.
Yeah, it's right around. The 52-week high is 1,204. So anyway, it's right there. And it's going to have talk about a Russian relay game here. You know, if they come out with a number and the number really is very, very high, you know, popping up quite a bit from here is not off the chart. And then if they come out and they, this is the only thing I'd be concerned about, that I had read somewhere that they were going to factor in that fine in their Q2 earnings. If that statement that I read is true and it wipes out 75% of their Q2 earnings, that could be something that could be a problem. So unfortunately, like you just said, the premiums are so huge, even though the stock really hasn't been that volatile, you know, last week or so. It's a shame the premiums are so high, because this would be a classic two-sided trade. But a good point is, if the premiums are so prohibitively high, you know, then it's a rough racket to do.
The other thing you can do is you can look at Facebook. These two names tend to move together for whatever reason. So a lot of times Facebook and Google move in very similar directions. So you could try playing Facebook. The other problem is you have Facebook has earnings this week as well. So their premiums are also jacked through the roof. So you can kind of run into a double-edged sword there.
Yeah. They said that the majority of S&P stocks are announcing this week. So that's why volatility changing from the 13 number, either up or down sharply, you know, could be a reasonable speculation, because you would think with Draghi meeting and the GDP number Friday and all these companies announcing, there'd be enough juice in the news to get people to move the thing one way or the other.
I'm sure they'll be waiting. I mean, they may not move it until tomorrow, after the option players, after they you know, they pull the IV out of the options in the morning. You know they love to do that, right? You play the earnings game where they, you know, they open the stock, they spread it so wide nobody can get the out of their options, and they drain the IV, and the next thing you know, your options are worthless, and then they move the stock. We always love that game. But yeah, I mean, I think they're looking to play. I think one of the things I would say is you got to look for volume in this market. If you want to play in a name right now, you need to have volume there. If there's no volume there, stay away from it, because, you know, volume is the driver. Volume is, for me, is the big tell. We all look at our technicals here, and I love the moving averages like you. I love looking for good technical setups and option flow, but there's just no volume behind it. The stock's not going to move.
Yeah, it needs the action.
It needs the action. All right. So let's start wrapping it up. Roy, let's go to you. Why don't you tell us about yourself? Tell us about your business and how people can get a hold of you, and whatever you'd like to tell us there.
Sure. I've been doing Steady Trader for 4 years now. Before that, I was consulting for a bunch of trading education companies and then decided to go out on my own. So we focus on, again, we have a very strict mentality of that even the best predictors can only predict for a couple days out. So we say our time horizon is 5 days. Get in and out within 5 days. Take your pennies and move on to the next, and just, you know, pile up gains from a couple dozen trades in a month. If anybody wants to see our picks for tomorrow, I know you asked earlier about that. We'll be running scans after the close today, but if anyone wants to send me, shoot me an email from the show today, I'll send you what our picks are for tomorrow. info@steadytrader.com. The website is steadytrader.com. If anyone wants to take a look at it, we have a free book on there called Read This First Before You Buy Stocks. We've downloaded over 10,000 copies, so it's a pretty popular book, worth reading.
Roy, thanks very much. Thanks for being on the show. Jim, same thing. Tell us about yourself, how we can get a hold of you.
Right. Basically, I just wanted you to know that I'm going to be having a podcast that'll be on YouTube, and it's going to be a weekly update on all the markets that I watch. I've been doing this for a very long time, so I'm pretty familiar with the stock indexes and the stocks, so I'll be going over that. I'll be going over interest rates. You know, a lot of people either are affected by interest rates or they own bonds or whatever. I'll be going over that market. The U.S. dollar is very interesting right now because it is up at the upper end of its range in the 95-96 area. I'll be covering my opinion on that. Then we'll move over to energy prices, and then also over into the gold and silver, and finally the grains. Those last three obviously have been way out of favor, but things do change over time. So I'll be keeping an eye on that as well. So you can go to YouTube and check it out each week. I'll be updating it, and that's a good way to keep informed. And at least for this time, it is going to be free of charge. So you should take advantage of it while it is being offered free of charge. That's going to be on YouTube. And if you want to shoot me an email with anything specific you have on your mind, a question on something you're holding, or how an option strategy could be employed against it, or what the use or the risk of a strategy would be, I'm more than happy to give you a hand, optionprofessor@gmail.com. Just shoot an email over to me, and I'll try to give you some information to give you a hand.
Tim, thank you very much. Myself, my name is Mike Pisani. I own a small company called smartoptiontrading.com. First of all, you want to get a hold of me, I'm very much on Twitter. You guys hit me up on Twitter @OptionsMike. It'll look like this. You'll know you tweeting at me, send me a direct message, or just reply to one of my tweets. And, you know, I put a lot of stuff out there all the time that's free and you can go out there and use. If you're interested in what I do, come out to smartoptiontrading.com, click on Find Out More. And I offer online mentoring. This is where I teach you how to trade, teach you what I do, teach you how to read the flow, and also just walk through your trades with you. Sometimes people need somebody to sit there and talk to them about their trades and what's going on. And then I do real-time option flow. And what this really is you come in every morning, you get a morning setups video where I go over what I like for the morning, what I feel about the market and what it's doing. This is delivered to you by 8:30 every morning. You get a recap video of all the option flow, the trades, what looks good, how the markets are, whether we're getting sentiment overbought, oversold, how we feel about it, what we're looking for the rest of the week moving forward there as well. And then I do a weekly mentoring webinar every Thursday night for my subscribers. This is where you guys could come in and ask anything and we go over learning, right? So we're always learning within here. I'm live throughout the day, sometimes 2 to 3 hours a day talking, whether through my own live feed or doing a moderating at Alpha Shark. And then on Twitter, I'm constantly calling out the option flow and news and events and my trades and things that look good or overall what the market's doing there. So again, smartoptiontrading.com. Come over, visit me there, or hit me up at Options Mike on Twitter. Guys, do you have any closing comments, Jim, before we turn this back over to David? Anything else you'd like to add?
No, just like to wish everybody a good and successful trading out there, and try to do as best as you can out there, and contact me if you have any questions on anything we covered today.
Hey, Mike, I think
thanks,
you're...
Thanks, Roy. Any closing comments for yourself? Jim, it was a pleasure being here with you.
You bet. Thank you.
No, I just want to thank everyone for coming. Thank you, guys. A good discussion today. I think we're pretty much all in agreement. Take it slow. It's summer. Be cautious. Things aren't moving too quickly and not necessarily a week for big, big moves.
Thanks, Roy. Pleasure doing the show with you. David, that's it for us. We're in on time, a couple minutes ahead of schedule. Thanks for having me moderate, and it's been a pleasure being on Crowd Forecast News. Turn it over to you, sir.
Yeah, thanks, guys. And thanks for moderating, Mike. Just a reminder for everyone, be sure to subscribe to Timing Research on YouTube and your favorite podcast service. Also, you can go to timingresearch.com and get access to any of the past reports or past shows there. Analyze Your Trade will be back tomorrow, episode number 42, at the normal time of 4:30 p.m. Eastern. Christian Fromhertz, Larry Gaines, and Dean Jenkins will be on for that one. And just want to thank my guests again for this week. As I mentioned in the beginning, John Thomas of MadHedgeFundTrader.com was supposed to be here today, but wasn't able to make it. So we'll try to have him back soon. Also, Jim Kenny of OptionProfessor.com. And as he mentioned, he's going to have a new podcast that's going to be broadcast on YouTube and as well as the other podcast networks. So we'll have more information about that soon. Also, Roy Swanson of SteadyTrader.com and Mike Bassani of AlphaShark.com and SmartOptionTrading.com. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks David. David.